This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Have you seen people working out in their yards during the pandemic or at the garden store buying seeds like crazy? It's never a bad idea to have a hand in sourcing your own food, especially in places like Michigan, where some of our communities have been deprived of options for buying nutritious food. There are strong historical reasons for that, and our summer series on systemic racism turns today toward food systems. Detroit native Melvin Parson is the founder and executive director of We the People Opportunity Farm. It's a nonprofit that works with ex-offenders re-entering the community and gives them skills in agriculture. He has personal experience of how change in the food system can happen, how food systems are shaped by us, and how we can shape them in turn. Melvin Parson, welcome to Stateside.
Oh, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
I wanted to start off just by asking, what's in season at We the People Opportunity Farm right now? Or perhaps at this point in August, I should say, what's not in season?
Right. At this point, for a lot of farmers, vegetables and growing and harvest is in abundance. Right now at We the People Opportunity Farm, what we grow primarily are four types of produce. We grow kale, two varieties of that, collard greens, jalapeno peppers, and three varieties of heirloom tomatoes.
Will you tell us a little bit about what your relationship with food was like growing up in Detroit?
My relationship with food, even though I was raised by my grandparents who migrated from the South, as did a lot of African-Americans slash black folk, we didn't grow food. I didn't grow up in a household where we grew our own food. I believe, that was the kind of like the beginning of frozen food, quick food, fast food. And so even though I grew up in a household where I can probably count on one hand the number of times I didn't have a hot breakfast that my grandmother cooked, my relationship for food, let's say outside of the household, was all about McDonald's and Burger King and TV dinners and stuff like that.
Sure. I mean, it seems like, especially for that generation, like your grandparents, I mean, this was certainly true of mine too, maybe just growing up, growing everything, they felt like by the time they were taking a hand in our upbringing, they were okay if they didn't grow anything ever again.
They were. I believe that. And also, for my grandparents and a lot of black folks, they still had trauma associated with growing food. Part of the reason they fled from the South was because of their time on plantations and being forced to grow food for other people. Even today, even two generations beyond, like my grandparents, I'll talk to young black folks or folks of my age, and they associate growing food with slavery. There's still like a huge need for land reconciliation and food reconciliation that flows through my community.
You know, the story of Detroit is so interesting because on the one hand, there are parts of town that we think of today as food deserts, now that that term is a little bit more common. And then there are places like the Eastern Market where, you know, food is very central to the story of the neighborhood. And you know, if not abundant for everybody, certainly visible. Did you ever go to places like Eastern Market?
I remember being taken down to the Eastern Market by my granddad a couple of times. And, you know, I was young age. I may have been 10, 11, 12, something like that. And so I really couldn't wrap my mind around the busyness and the buzz and what it represented and you know, just that undercurrent of it. At that time, I just thought it was a busy place and it smelled funny.
Melvin, you spent some time in your life, I want to say nearly 13 years, in and out of prison. How did your life turn from that period into an interest in the land and in growing?
I don't know. There's a lot of twists and turns and plots, I'll say that much. Wow, I don't even know where to begin with that. I None of the time outside of having been released, the last time I was released from being incarcerated, none of those things led me up to my interest in food and the land. I'd moved from that one small horse town called Detroit up here to Ann Arbor on May the 8th of 2004. And even having moved up here, I still floundered around a lot. I got connected to a recovery community. I'm in recovery. And while up here doing that time, I found myself homeless three times. And then I wound up in one of Avalon Housing's properties, and their mission is to break the cycle of homelessness, to end homelessness. And so I lived there, and they had this edible garden program, and I lived there for 4 years. And each year that program ran, came around, I had no interest in growing food. And in the winter of 2013, a wonderful lady named Verna, who was a prolific gardener, just a sweetheart of a person, she passed away that winter. And the following spring in 2014, I somehow wound up with her raised vegetable bed. And it was a vegetable bed that I didn't ask for. It just kind of fell in my lap. And so I just kind of rolled with it, and I was given some seedlings, and I put them in the ground, and some stuff started growing, and it made me interested in where my food came from. A couple of things also happened that month. I saw a documentary called Food Inc. And then that same month in April, I turned 50 years old, and I had a midlife crisis, but I was poor, so I couldn't buy a Corvette. And so I decided to change my relationship with food. And I must say that I'm still working on changing that relationship. And so that led me to the Carytown Farmers Market in Ann Arbor
What
to try
was
to figure.
your, it shares some elements with the Eastern Market, but what was it like visiting that for the first time as an adult?
It was, I don't know, I felt energized visiting it for the first time as an adult. But only because the interest in growing my food and learning about where my food came from was the harbinger to me visiting that market. So I had a different perspective. Plus, I was an adult, and so not a child. And so I'd find myself down there for an hour sometimes trying to figure out what kale was, or radish, or turnip. And in my time down there, I would see no one that looked like me. When I say that, I mean African American, or very few folks that look like me. I would look around, and I noticed that the folks or the farmers selling me the produce and the fruits did not look like me either. And I'm a firm believer that either you have a seat at the table, or you're what's on the menu. And it felt like in that moment, in one of those excursions down there, that the skies opened up and yelled down to me and said, "Hey, Melvin, this is where I want you to sit at." And ever since then, it feels like the universe has conspired not only to make sure that I have a seat at the table, but also that I have a voice at the table. And if I don't mess this thing up, I have an opportunity to set the table in some ways.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Melvin Parson. He's the founder and executive director of the nonprofit We the People Opportunity Farm, which provides fresh produce to restaurants and some groceries within Washtenaw County. Tell us a little bit about what you founded We the People Opportunity Farm to do. Tell us about the mission.
The mission is to break the cycle of incarceration here in Washtenaw County. And one of the ways in which we go about doing that is this year we launched our paid internship program for formerly incarcerated men and women. And in that program, as we're developing it, part of the time they spend, of course, out at our farm learning how to grow food and take care of food and cultivate it and harvest it and all those things centered around that. But The meat and potatoes we feel our organization feels is the community engagement aspect of it. Getting them back involved into the community in a way that supports them in an effort to change the soil in their lives.
Can you talk a little bit about what it's like to introduce people to this idea of having a relationship with the land and having a relationship with food? I mean, if you're not growing up cooking, it's not always really intuitive. And if you don't, certainly if you don't grow up gardening, just the idea of, what is the time I'm going to spend with this? What is the, just even understanding what the work of growing things is like.
Right. It's a mixed bag, and it's a bag that has a lot of variables. I've met folks that get really excited about it right away. Then I've met folks that it's just not their jam. I mean, I've had one person come out there and a potential intern. And we talked over the phone prior to him coming out to our farm, and he was really excited and really vested and super engaged in our phone conversation. And he came out there to meet me. It was one day. It wasn't terribly hot, but it was hot outside. And he got out the car, and we talked for less than a minute. And he said to me, looked me in the eye, and he said, "You know what, man? I cannot do this."
Yeah.
And he made an about face as he was saying it, like he was dead set on him not being able to do this,
Wow.
and got back in his car and took off. But on the other hand, we've had folks that it was just the polar opposite experience.
So the organization's been around for about 5 years, and I was impressed by the number of relationships with restaurants and stores that you've been able to build during that time. Can you tell us a little bit about where you take the farm's product?
Sure. We've been really fortunate to develop relationships with local restaurants both in Ann Arbor and here in Ypsilanti. I can remember the first year that I started really growing food for production in 2017. I called a dear friend of mine after I realized that I had all of this food growing and didn't know what to do with it. I called a dear friend of mine whose name is Ari Winesweek. He's a co-founder of Zingerman's. And I said, "Hey, Ari, man, I got all this dang on food growing and I don't know what to do with it." And he said, "Melvin, we'll buy some from you." And that started my relationships with some of the chefs and food restaurant owners.
I believe you also have some food that goes back to the community. Is that right?
We do. We're really excited about that too. As a result of COVID-19, I thought about how we could be the best community partner given this pandemic that's just hit us all. And so as a result of infusion of financial support from one of our valued community partners, United Way of Washtenaw County, and another new partner of ours, the Ann Arbor Area Community Foundation, we were able to shift our business model almost seamlessly to make sure that a bulk of the food that we grew out at our farm wound up on the tables of our neighbors who have been exposed to food scarcity.
Melvin, people of color have been farming this land for centuries in Michigan, both black farmers, playing a role in Michigan agriculture, but also indigenous people and Latinx people who worked on farms. But
Yes.
we know that historically it's been very difficult for people of color to both own and retain farmland. Did people in your circle have stories to tell when the word started to get out that you were starting an urban farm?
Yeah, sure. I've heard stories of centered around land access or just access into the food system. You know how challenging that has been for some folks. And also, you know, I've heard stories where people of color have shared to me where access, at least into the food system, like they've been welcomed into the food system, that kind of way. There's a lot of farmers that I've met along the way in all stations of food production that are super supportive, super giving of their knowledge and resources and all of that.
I know that this is a difficult time for anybody running a nonprofit to think about expansion or long-term plans when everyone is sort of just struggling to get through the moment. But are there hopes that you have for what we the people might do in the years to come, or just initiatives that you think you'd like to work on now?
I've got super hopes for what I see we the people becoming and just its place in a community. Yeah, there's hopes and visions for expanding our footprint in relation to the amount of paid, formerly incarcerated paid interns that we have coming through our program every year. There's hopes and visions for expanding land so that we can increase our footprint on the amount of food and that we're able to give back to the community at no cost. And there's hopes and visions for just simply being an even better community partner than we are right now.
Well, Melvin Parson, Executive Director of We the People Opportunity Farm, we want to thank you for everything you're doing and good luck. We hope everybody who works on the farm can stay safe right now.
Well, thank you very much for your kind words, April. And before I go, I would like to give a quick shout out to everyone that we are currently in the process of a fundraising campaign that can be found on our website, which is WTPOF.org. And please follow us on our Facebook page, our social media pages. Our Facebook page is We the People Opportunity Farm, and our Instagram page is the acronym of our organizational name, that is WTPOF.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate your talking to us.
Appreciate you. Thanks, April.